7 ways to manage extreme crisis in your life. Hi, this is Gary Cox. I'm glad you've joined me in this program. Perhaps you're listening to this program because you are experiencing some kind of extreme crisis in your life, or maybe you're feeling some of the ripple effects from something that happened to you recently. You know, your definition of extreme crisis may be different from somebody else's or mine, but if to you it is, then it is. And if you're not experiencing some kind of crisis, well, congratulations. But I strongly still recommend that you listen to this and do it now and create the strategies in your mind to counteract what could happen. Oh no, this is not negative. It's realistic and it's called life. Or maybe you're here because you want to learn some tools and some strategies to help contribute and help others. Well, no question about it. I'll be able to assist you with that as well. This program is the first program that I'm actually sharing in detail my most extreme crisis in my life and what I did to get through it. Now, you may have heard my story before, and what you've heard before, that's not the extreme part. And that included my wife telling me my baby's not mine. And yes, it seems extreme, and at the time it was, but it's even worse than that. You heard perhaps maybe that I found out that my wife was cheating on me with one of my employees who happened to be 15 years of age. How's that work for you, ego? Then I find out my father was murdered, shot point blank in the chest, and drowned in his own blood. See, I know a thing or two about extreme crisis, and that, what I just shared with you, that little story there, in a way, is nothing compared to the extreme crisis that I experienced many, many years after that. And I'm going to share that with you. And I do this for several reasons. One, I want you to understand that you are listening and learning from someone who has truly been through some extreme crisis in their life. And this crisis, and crises, I should say, that I've been through, I've really been very fortunate that I've taken what I've been through and I've allowed it to enable me, hopefully, to be a better person, a better man, more caring. But this sounds all nice, but when you're going through this crisis of your life, you know, you're not going in a crisis thinking, wow, you know, I can't wait to get over this because it's just going to make me a better man or a better woman. I'm going to give you specific strategies on what I did day to day, and some of this crisis lasted years. I mean, it was the most challenging time of my life. I made a decision in about 2007 that dramatically changed my life forever. It was a decision that nearly cost me everything, and that included me losing my so-called friends and family, including my mother. And I'm going to go into detail on the extreme pain that I experienced through this crisis and what I did to walk myself through it, getting to the other side and being the happiest I've ever been in my entire life. Now, I'll warn you up front, this program is not a magic pill. That's what medication is for. And they're not so magical. Been there, done that. This is not a pump up, rah, rah, kumbaya, you know, just be excited about life. It's more than that. This is practical, real world, real solution stuff. So if you're looking for a quick fix, go get some meds. You're looking at the wrong place. But if you're looking for life-changing results, stay with me. More importantly, too, you're going to be listening in on some consultations of individuals who are going through some extreme crisis, and you're going to hear me work with them step by step, live. It's not canned. It's not rehearsed. And this is going to be some really, really good stuff because you're going to be able to relate to what you're listening to so you can apply it in your life or help others do the same. At times, it could be a few simple words that could change your whole perception and outlook in life. But stress and crisis is a cancer that often keeps you from focusing and having the right perception. Here's an example of what a simple poem might be able to do for some people's perception. Said the wildflower to the sparrow, I should really like to know why these anxious human beings rush about and worry so. Said the sparrow to the wildflower, friend, I think that it must be that they have no heavenly Father such as cares for you and me. So let's begin. Now, I'll tell you right up front, as I've already hinted before, I don't have any magical information here either. There is nothing new under the sun. But with that being said, Due to extreme crisis and stress in our lives, if we're not careful, we'll often forget what's under the sun, and then we allow our circumstances to dramatically taint our perceptions. And I'm guilty of that as the next person. And this is why you have to regularly influence your mind to focus on and reconstruct the right perceptions for your life. And this program is going to be an exercise in mastering the ability to unravel all that. Also, too, as I share with you my frank discussion of some of the things that I've been through in my past. Now, not only do I hope you're listening to this to manage your present and future challenges in your life, but also to allow them to make you stronger for future ones that may or may not be so challenging as perhaps what you're, you know, experiencing now. But remember, life does happen. This is the type of attitude that you have to have that makes you want to grow from your past. As a way of constantly reminding myself of my extreme growth through the challenges that I've been through. You know, sometimes I'll joke when somebody kind of bumps into me accidentally and they'll say, oh, I'm sorry. I'll say, oh, trust me, worst has happened. And I have a perception because I've been through so many things in life that what I normally think is like a no-brainer, the average person is like totally freaked out. And we're going to talk about how to manage a lot of that so the challenges that happen don't control us so much where we have more control. It doesn't make it go away or necessarily always make it easier, but it does enable you to have more control. So briefly, let me share with you a little bit about my story. I don't want to waste your time here or bore you, but you may have known the other stuff like I shared with you, my wife telling me my baby's not mine and my father being murdered and, you know, just countless things. Grandfather and stepfather died of cancer. Very abusive, emotionally abusive stepfather, hugely abusive. And I had all this happen to me by the time I was 21 years of age. And then in about 2007, I made a huge decision that dramatically changed my life. And what it was is I was raised in a religion as a young child, and that religion is very strict in its ways. And if you are in that religion and you choose to leave that religion, all your so-called friends and family in that religion will shun you for the rest of your life until you come back into that religion. Of course, they make it sound like you have to come back to God. Their religion, in the sense, is God. So if you come back to their religion, then you'll be accepted by them and God. Well, I made the decision after some time of contemplating that I would leave that religion. I'm going to be very upfront with you as well. I also made a decision to dissolve an 18-year marriage, something that I'm not proud of, meaning I don't think that divorce is something that is, you know, a scriptural thing, if you will, but I made the decision, and it is what it is. I was so wrapped up in this religion, which means that this religion wants you and encourages you to have no friends within reason outside of that religion. So outside of the religion, I may have had maybe, I don't know, literally five friends or less, probably three, that I could just really share my inner thoughts with, people that I might consider as a friend. So once I left this religion, I lost all my so-called friends and family that were in the religion, friends that I've had literally all my life. My mother, subsequently, as this time of the recording of this and writing of this, she has not spoken to me in many, many years. But this is a choice. But I will tell you, it was not very easy. It was a lot more difficult than I anticipated, because it would be like me taking you and picking you up and putting you into a foreign country and telling you, you start from scratch, and all the friends that you had where you were previously, you no longer will have contact with them. You're done. You start over. So I had to create new friends, and that's not easy, because you want to make sure your new friends are people you can trust. It takes time to trust people, not to mention the financial loss was huge, because now going through the divorce, and now I've lost all the support. I have no support anymore from so-called friends and family. It was by far the most extreme dramatic time of my life. And when I tell you that my father was murdered and grandfather and stepfather died of cancer and all those other tragedies, I believe they're really small compared to the extreme crisis that I went through. And that should give you an example how extreme it was. And it took me a number of years to get everything organized, to reconstruct my entire life to the point that where I'm at now, that I am truly the happiest I've ever been in my life. So I'm going to share with you the step-by-step strategies that I used to get through all this. No matter what you're going through, there are steps and strategies that you can implement to make it easier. I didn't say easy, I said easier. And then I think what you're going to enjoy in this program is that you're going to listen in on some consultations of people that are going through some major, major challenges in their life. And then we're going to take some of these principles, as first I share them with you now, and then we're going to see how we can apply them in somebody else's life, real people, real world, so you can see how you can work on applying them in your life so you too can get the results. So let's start off with the first one, acknowledge. You cannot change what you don't acknowledge. What does this mean? This means that you must make an honest assessment of what's going on in your life and how you're reacting to this. Because if you're not careful, you'll be immediately engrossed in the negative emotion at hand, and it will consume you like a fog, so foggy that you cannot see ahead of you. And I know you've been through that. And this is what it did for me. And what happens is when that fog is so thick, you cannot see light at the end of the tunnel, which means you don't have hope. And hope is the anchor to the soul. And when you get so consumed into your emotion because of your crisis, you lose some of that hope. And when you don't have hope, you don't have a lot. So we're going to talk about how to get some of that hope back and have the right perception and barrel through this stuff. The next thing that we have to do, and this is very difficult, and I bring this as number two because I want to get in your head the steps that you've got to get to, and this is the second step that we don't get to right away, but if you can, it really puts a perception on things immediately. Immediately. The second thing, and you've heard this before, again, nothing new under the sun, but I want you to listen to the twist that I'm sharing with you. The next thing, number two, is we've got to take responsibility. You take responsibility by asking the following question. Here's the question now. Is there anything that I could have done to prevent this from happening? Watch how you answer this. For example, the situation that I went through leaving that religion, could I have prevented that? Yeah, I could have stayed into it, but I chose not to. But how I responded with my emotions after, is there something I could have done to master that a little bit better? Now that I look back, absolutely, as I'm in it, it's harder to do that. And what I'm trying to get you to do is to do it while you're in it. And this is the reason that I've listed this as the second thing right on the top of the list, because it's one of the hardest things to do. Just imagine something major happening to you, and then you have this immediate thought where you're switched up as you're getting caught into your emotions, and you're saying, is there anything that I could have done to prevent this from happening? That is not easy to do. Now, what makes asking a question like this so difficult is that you're probably, by this time, so caught up in the negative emotion from the crisis that you're in, whether it's, you know, a death of a loved one or, you know, some financial crisis. And it doesn't mean to say that we can control everything. It's just something that we need to put out there. And depending on the problem that you might be experiencing, if you're not careful, you might be more interested in having a pity party. And let me tell you, it's easy to have a pity party when you have lost all your so-called friends and family, finances, the whole nine yards. And this takes a higher level of emotional growth to think like this. And some of what happens to us is no fault of our own, and some of it is perhaps some of the faults of our own. Now, you'll often find that this question is much easier to ask ourselves after the dust has settled, you know, hours, weeks, months, or years later when the fog is gone. But what I try to do is I try to force myself to get to the root of the problem now. It doesn't necessarily change the fact that the problem exists, but it gives me the opportunity to go into my perceptions, if you will. Let's place some balance on this, though. I want to give you a scenario. And in this scenario, it's just designed to, like I said, put some balance in this and give you the right perspective and how to look at this. Let's say there's a boyfriend, girlfriend, and the girlfriend's cooking up something, and she says to her boyfriend, honey, can you go to the store and get some milk? And he just, for some reason, doesn't feel like doing it, and he doesn't want to do it, so she says, okay, I'll do it. She goes to the store. On the way to the store, she gets in a car accident and gets killed. So when I talk about taking responsibility here and asking yourself the question, is there something that I could have done to prevent this? This would not apply reasonably in this particular situation, because if the person says, well, yeah, I could have prevented this by going to the store and getting the milk. Well, if you look at that this way, then what happens now, you're riddled with guilt all your life. This is something that's done. There's nothing more you can do to change it. And if you want to feel guilty being that boyfriend, if you will, then you may as well blame also this girl's parents for having her and bringing her into the world, because she eventually came to this world and went to the store and got killed. So if you're going to blame yourself for not going when you probably should have, you may as well go ahead and blame her parents and her parents' parents for having her parents and so on and so forth. So you can take this so far. This is where you've got to find the balance. I'm referring to more so, say you're going to the store and you didn't put your seatbelt on and you had an accident and then you got all cut up, and if you had your seatbelt on, then you would have prevented the damage to yourself. So I'm looking at it that way. What could you have done? I could learn from this. Next time I need to be driving with my seatbelt. So we've got to balance this. Find a balance, because there's a lot of people that, you know, they say, oh, I could have gone to the store. And now they live with guilt. I don't live with guilt or regret. If you live with guilt, there's something wrong. If you're living with regret, there's something wrong. It means you haven't cleaned up. No one can make you feel guilty. You allow yourself to feel guilty. So this is something that we have to balance, and we're going to be getting into more of this. That's why there's no straight, here's the answer, here's what you do. So we've got to go ahead and get this understood. What is it that you can learn from in this particular situation? Number three, you have to accept what you can't change. There's some things that you can change and some things that you can't. And I think this is where people really get so wrapped up into what's going on that they don't realize that they've got to divide this up a little bit. One, accept what you can't change. And then number two, if you can change it, then work towards that. Too often we fight against something that cannot be changed. And if we keep fighting against that, all we're doing is we're resisting even more. And the more you resist, the more it's going to stay there. So we keep resisting and we keep having the negative emotion more and over and over and over. And I want to share with you how understanding this concept made a huge, huge difference in my life. And again, I'm going to share with you a lot of personal things. So after leaving this religion, it was so huge that I came very close to being bankrupt, the closest I've ever been in my life. And I tell you what, emotionally, it was not a fun thing. I thought I was going to be able to handle that a lot better, until one day it had gotten so bad. I'll never forget the day. I know it was a Thursday. I know exactly where I was standing. I said to myself, Gary, you must now accept this possibility. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm setting out to make this a fulfilling prophecy, but the possibility exists. And if I did not accept it, I was constantly trying to fight it emotionally with negative emotions, not positive emotions. Once I accepted the possibility that this could happen, emotionally everything changed. It changed so much so that my head was on tighter, and then I was able to perform better, and I was able to turn everything around. But I did not get that attitude until I accepted that this is a possibility and it's very likely. It doesn't mean that I'm going to maintain the attitude and just cave in and throw in the towel. That's not the attitude here. Again, understand that if it's something that you cannot change, let's go ahead and acknowledge it, because when you do that, your whole thinking, your paradigm, everything will begin to change. And if it doesn't, then you haven't really accepted it yet. And that's your measuring rod to know whether you accepted it or not. If you don't accept, if you're not careful, you're going to start identifying some really negative patterns of behavior, verbal abuse, excess alcohol, drugs, sleeping pills, and the list can go on and on and on. Another thing people forget to do when they're going through extreme crisis is you have got to often, ASAP, right away, remove things off your plate. You've got to reduce some of the stress. The army puts you in boot camp under stress purposely. They do specific things to stress you out. One of the things they do in their training is they get up in your face and they yell and they yell and they yell nonstop, and they don't shut up. They do that purposely because it prevents you from thinking. It floods your thought process so much you can't even get your head straight. So they just throw things at you verbally over, and they don't do it quietly. They do it fast and loud and in your face, and it keeps you from gathering your thoughts. So if you've got so much going on in your stress, you've got to immediately identify things that you can do right now to reduce the stress. Take things off of your plate. I'll give you a simple little idea that I use in just regular day-to-day life. If I'm traveling by myself, what I'll do is I will often, you know, I'll get a car if I'm not having somebody pick me up, and I'll get the GPS out and figure out where I'm going. And then if I think I might be running late, maybe due to my fault or not, all of a sudden I can feel the stress level coming, especially if it's obviously a speaking engagement that I have to be at. I mean, if I'm under contract, I've got to be there. So the stress level can start coming up. One of the first things I do, if I find that I'm not quite sure where I'm going and if the radio is on, the first thing I do is shut it off. I take things off my plate. And when I shut it off, what it does, it enables me to think better. Look for things that you can shut off. Maybe you're doing too much in your routine, in your day-to-day life, that you're going to have to take off your plate and put aside. This will help you manage the stress and the crisis. If you don't do that, you're going to get yourself in more trouble. So that's another reason, too, for me, that I like to try to keep my life as simple as possible. I know some people looking at my life may think it's not simple, but it's simpler than you realize. Trust me on that. And the reason I do that, I like to have buffer room. I like to have some space in case there are going to be some problems. It's like when you're driving a car, you're taught if you're driving behind a car, for every 10 miles an hour, you should be at least a car length back. So if you're driving 60 miles an hour, you should be six car lengths back in case something were to happen in front of you, somebody, you know, hits the brake or whatever. But if you're constantly driving at 60 miles an hour and you're only one car length back, you are setting yourself up for trouble. So you've got to have some space there, some buffer. And unfortunately, sometimes we get ourselves caught up where we're only one car length behind a 60 miles an hour car. And if you're not careful, the stress is going to start coming in. And maybe, boom, the stress already happened. You hit the car, whatever. But this is where we've got to look at things and start taking things off our plate so we can manage the crisis or the stress at hand. Extremely important. I do this on little things day to day, like I shared with you, you know, about the car when I'm driving, you know, quiet, radio goes off. I can think better. It reduces the stress. Look for things that you can do to manage and reduce the stress. I am not talking about medication, even though sometimes it may be necessary. That's a whole other subject. We may get into that later on. The next thing that we have to do is we have to learn to manage our emotions. We really have to learn to manage our emotions. There is no magic pill here. A challenge that I find in when it comes to managing emotions, it doesn't necessarily mean to eliminate the negative emotion. Yes, that would be the ultimate thing to do. It would be nice to do, but understand you cannot always eliminate the emotion. This is why it's so important to learn to lead our emotions and not be a slave to them. And I also have a program. If you have not listened to it, you must get it. Three simple steps to leading your feelings and not being a slave to them. You have got to learn to manage your feelings and emotions, and if you don't, you're going to be a slave to them. Now, leading them does not necessarily mean the negative emotion changes right away. And it's important for you to understand that, because if we want the negative emotion to change right away, which of course we do, it doesn't always happen that way. And if you're not careful, as you try to lead your emotions, you're still stuck with some of the negative emotions. They're still behind you. They're still pulling along. And if you're not careful, you'll go back to rewarding them, and then your stress will continue to expand and get worse because you're not managing your emotions. Very, very, very important. One of the things that I had to learn to do is I had to learn to really manage my emotions when I went through all this, you know, leaving the religion and losing all my so-called friends and family. And you'll notice I always throw in the word so-called. And the reason I do, I don't believe friends or family should shun people because they're not in harmony with the way they would like you to think. And because I've chosen not to be in harmony by any stretch of the imagination with the way they think, I look at them as so-called friends and family. And one of the biggest challenges for me is to really learn to tap into my emotions, and that's something that I had to keep doing. And thank goodness I do what I do for a living, because I was not prepared to handle the challenge that I experienced. Like I said, I did not realize it was going to be so emotionally dramatic and so challenging. And it became more challenging for me because I made a decision that I am not going back. It's done. So I had to accept the fact that the friends and family, so-called, that I had for 30 years or all my life, I had to accept the fact that I will probably never talk to them again. And once I got to that point, and I got to that pretty quickly, the challenging part for me was the loneliness, not having somebody to express things with and share with. And you just don't bring friends on right away. And I have my definition of what I think true friends are. And until I found somebody who met that definition, then I would bring them into what I refer to as my friends. And until that point, then I became lonely because I'm just not going to let anybody in. There's a lot of challenges that I had to go through. But the loneliness definitely was a challenge. I'll never forget this. This was shortly after leaving the religion. As you might know, I fly airplanes and helicopters and what have you, and I fly to a lot of my locations myself when I can. And up until this time, I always had friends or family with me when I flew. It was rare that I would ever or have ever been in an airplane where I'm piloting it, where I'm by myself, until after I left the religion. So one day I flew down to Miami for a presentation, and I came back and I landed. I'll never forget this, and I'm being very open with you on this. And I landed, pulled the airplane up, and as I landed, the rain was just coming down and pouring and pouring and pouring. And at this time, I believe that was the first time I've ever actually flown by myself, other than, you know, when I learned to fly, you know, you have to do your solo flying and what have you. And it was so emotional for me because when I landed, it was raining like crazy. There was nobody there to help me. So I got out of the airplane. I was just totally soaking wet, opened up the hangar door, and then I went ahead to get the golf cart. We use a golf cart to put the airplane in and out. The battery was dead. It was just like I felt that everything was caving in on me, and I just broke down and cried. And I could see now the growth that I have now, obviously, but it was due to knowing in my mind at that point that I was here all by myself. I didn't have a friend now that I could just call and say, hey, can you help me out? I need the cart charged up, or just can you just give me some support? There was nobody I could call. And this happened just pretty much right after making that decision. I've learned to really take my emotions to a whole nother level, not to mention that this experience, I've been able to come through it now, and I look back on it. I really do believe it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life, because now I have a whole new life. I just look forward to each and every day that I have freedom to think. I have religious freedom. I have emotional freedom. I have thinking freedom. And it is very, very exciting. I feel literally that I've started my life from scratch, but with an adult mind. So that's kind of cool. All right, let's keep going. Something that appears to be obvious, and it is, but very difficult to master. Number 5 is we must have the right attitude. Let's go into this a little bit. The right attitude. You ever seen somebody on the news being interviewed after they just lost their home from maybe a flood or a fire? It's pretty devastating for them, isn't it? They're crying, they're in tears. Maybe you've experienced something like this or know somebody that has. And then what happens a number of years later? Years later, they can look back at it with a totally different outlook. Why? They've had time to heal. So you know, after getting on the other side of a crisis or tragedy in your life, it usually looks a lot differently because you now have a different or a better attitude. You have time to reflect on things. What you want to do, and this is where you have to really, really stretch, is you want to determine how many months or, say, years did it take you to change your outlook or your attitude. Let's come up with a scenario and a magic number. Let's say it took 4 years, whatever it was, 4 years. Now you want to ask this question. This is huge. What could I have done to make it through in 3 years or 2 years or even 1 year? Now here is the wisdom behind this question. By even thinking about asking this question, You're changing your entire perception or attitude. By looking at things in this light, you're not waiting on time to heal all wounds. See, time does not heal all wounds. You do. And the quicker you can get past it, the quicker everything changes. Whether you realize it or not, everybody, including yourself, you give power to something or someone. You give power to God or to your emotions or your feelings. Some people give power to drugs or other people. We all give power to something. For example, some people, they may lose somebody in death. They may lose a loved one. And when they lose a loved one, the anniversary of that person's death, every year it comes around, or maybe even a birthday, Father's Day, Mother's Day, whatever, some special type of anniversary, that day, every year, for many, many years, they're totally devastated emotionally. Sometimes it's more than a day. Sometimes they allow the week or the month to totally control them. They're giving power to a day. And interesting, somebody recently shared with me that this young lady's father, her father had been previously divorced and getting remarried. He proposed to this lady, and several days before they were to marry, he died. Now, what's interesting is when the anniversary of the proposal came that he proposed to this lady, this woman on that day, that anniversary that she had been proposed to, she committed suicide. She gave power to a day. For me, I gave power to a location in one particular instance. I had found out that my wife had been cheating on me, and I shared that with you. Then I found out where it happened. Whether it was true or not, it was irrelevant. I gave power to that location, which means every time I needed to go past that location to go somewhere else, what do you think I did? Do you think I went past it or I went around it? Well, if I gave power to it, I did what? I went around it. I gave power to a location. So what did I do? Well, I understand that time does not heal all wounds. I do. So I drove past it. Oh, I cried. And I went back and cried and forth and cried and back and cried and forth and cried till I got it out of my system. Why? Because time does not heal all wounds. You do. So we have to get ourselves straightened up mentally where we can go ahead and confront that. If not, you are going to be waiting years and years and years to get through it if you haven't even gotten through it. It takes a huge mind, if you will, a huge attitude to get to the level of asking yourself, how fast can I heal and get through this, especially when you're going through it? Then the next question is, what will I need to do to make this happen? And that question is huge because asking a question like that, what do I need to do to heal or get through this faster, sets you up that you can't look for excuses any longer to have a pity party or to put the blame on somebody else. You now have to take responsibility. That's huge when it comes to attitude. Shakespeare said, "Nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Nothing. I repeat, nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Interesting. See, for every positive experience that you have in your life, there is a million people out there experiencing the exact same thing, and they're hating it. And for every negative experience that you have in your life, there's a million other people out there experiencing the exact same thing, and they are loving it. Why? It's because the thinking makes it so. Think about that. This is hard to grasp when you're going through major crisis or trouble or problems in your life. But when you can start thinking this way as you're going through it, not after, you are forcing yourself, you're pushing yourself to get through this as opposed to waiting on time. Now, I am not saying that we don't need time to heal and grieve. Absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt. I've already shared with you personally how I've done some of that. So it goes without saying, this is a must. But once we start getting through that, we can also grieve quicker. I'm not saying we don't grieve. We need to, but we can also do it faster with the ultimate goal and the ultimate attitude to get through this. Very important, very difficult. So remember, nothing is good or bad, But thinking makes it so. And it's so easy to forget things like this because remember, crisis and stress is a cancer to your attitude. It's a cancer to your perceptions. And if you can go through something majorly tragic in your life, and as you're going through this, you can ask yourself the question, somebody is going through this exact same thing and they're loving it. How could that be? What is that perception like? You may not be able to tap into it, but it makes you start going somewhere else in your mind. That is huge, very, very powerful, and very important. Another thing that I think we need to do that's very, very important, and without this, you will have no desire to keep going forward, and I think this is what makes tragedy so, so difficult, and crisis, is number six, you must find hope. If you lose all your hope, hope is the anchor to the soul, you will often not have a reason or a purpose to keep going forward. So when you feel that you've lost all hope, what you have to do is not cave into the fact that you've lost all hope. You need to acknowledge, okay, the reason I feel maybe suicidal or I feel so depressed is because I have identified that I have lost all hope. And what's terrible about this is when you feel that you've lost all hope, you don't feel like looking for hope because you've lost it. It's not out there for you to find. When in fact it really is. And that's where the challenge comes in. So try asking yourself, where is the hope in all this? And that enables you, again, to shift your thinking and to force yourself to try to let go. And this is very difficult if you truly have no hope. And I have been there. This is one of the most difficult things that I had to do. And I remember one day I was driving from Alabama to Atlanta. And it was again, going through all the stuff that I shared with you. I had just lost so much hope. I mean, it's difficult when you've lost all your so-called friends and family. You just feel hopeless. And I remember asking myself, where's my hope? I've got to find hope. I've got to find hope. And it was so powerful. But at the point, at that time and point, I couldn't find the hope. And it was my goal to find the hope. Finding the hope gets you through the emotion. And hope is so powerful. It gives you purpose. How many times have you heard of people that they got caught in an avalanche and they weren't found until like a week later or 2 weeks later? They actually survived. And people ask them, how is it that you allowed yourself to survive? What did you do? And they'll tell you stories like, I couldn't stop thinking about my family and my kids and them losing their dad or losing me, their mom, or whatever it is. And that thought gave them what? Gave them hope. So in crisis, you must keep looking for hope. And when you've lost your hope, that's a measuring rod. That's a signal to you that there's something dangerous going on here. The next thing to do is, what can we do now to find more hope? Number seven, you must have a tight support group. You must have a tight support group of friends. And I think that's one of the things that I did not do quick enough, is I should have spent a little bit more time looking for a tighter support group, but I did not know at that time where to go. Now, I'm not in a ex-religion support group. I'm very cautious about when I use this word support group. I'm not talking about going to a group because I'm trying to keep healing over and over for years and years and years and years. I'm more so referring to a close knit of friends. A close knit of friends that you can trust. To me, I look for a close knit of friends, and I am always looking for a close knit of friends, and I have a definition of that. For me, it's someone who doesn't talk about me behind my back. It's somebody who tells the truth about me. Hey, Gary, you're getting too cocky, or Gary, you're very unkind at this. You need to work on that. Or Gary, you're this or that. Somebody who's not a yes person. Somebody who is comfortable enough with me that they can call me out on some of my stuff. You've got to have a very tight support group of friends. And after you've gone through this, you still need to have a tight support group of friends. I'm always looking, that this is one of my goals, in fact. Like we have financial goals and other goals. I'm always looking for somebody that I can add into my group of tight, supportive friends. And I have little tests that I throw at people. They don't even know I'm doing it. For example, I might share something that I ask them, you know, that's between me and you. And it's not a big deal, but I know they have another friend that's also somebody who's a friend of mine. And then I'll go to that other friend and I'll throw a question or two out to see if they know something that if they do on that particular subject, I know the only person they got it from was that other person, which means I may not be able to confide in that other person. To me, a true friend is somebody that you can confide in, and it only goes between you and them. The few friends that I had after I left the religion, I found a tremendous amount of support in them. In fact, there were three friends that I now have to this day, my very, very best friends, my closest friends. Before I left the religion, I told them what I was about to do. And I told them how difficult this was going to be for me. One of them used to be raised in the religion, so he could relate and understand way better than my other two friends. What I needed to do is meet with them, which I did, and I ran down a whole list of things that I was going to experience after leaving this religion. And I was able to rely on them for tremendous support. I remember one day that it got so bad, and this was the last time that I ever just mentally or emotionally fell apart on all this because it was so challenging. And I went to my friend's house, my best friend, or one of my best friends, I should say, and I just wept. And he and his wife and just sat there with me. And he said, I don't know what to say. I said, you don't have to say anything. Just knowing I know you get it and understand. Now, you might listen and say, well, Gary, I thought you talk and preach about having control over your emotions. It doesn't mean that I am not human. I wanted to experience these feelings. Not saying I really want to experience these feelings, but I needed to let them go. I had to go ahead and get this out. And that was the last time that ever happened. That was an amazing time for me because I got it out of my system. So if I didn't have that support, and I remember this particular day, I was doing so bad, I had to call him up and said, I've just got to come over. And I was a mess. And I just drove over and I just sat in his living room. It was only about 10 or 15 minutes and I was fine. You've got to have support. You cannot have enough good, amazing friends. Keep looking for amazing friends. Look for your definition first of what is a friend. Get a good, tight definition like I have. And then when you have that definition, keep looking for people. You're not going to get a lot of them, especially if you have great standards, because I believe the standards that I shared with you makes me also a good friend to my friends. What is your definition? And then once you have that definition, make sure you look for people that you can keep adding into your friendship. So these are the seven things. We're now going to do a quick review. Then we're going to go into some consultations. You are going to love this. This is really deep and powerful stuff. And we're going to take this knowledge now and we're going to go all over the place with it. We may not go step by step. We'll start off with step by step, but we're going to move around and we're going to see how we can apply all this to taking somebody and helping them get through and managing their extreme crisis. And hopefully so far that you've been able to take some of this knowledge and see where you can apply it and what you could do to make things better and be able to manage your crisis to a degree that you can eventually get through it if you're experiencing. So number one, we've got to acknowledge. You've got to make an honest assessment of what's going on and how you're reacting. More importantly, the how you're reacting part. We get so wrapped up into that emotion, it's hard for us to realize that we're reacting to an emotion. Number two, we've got to start taking some responsibility here. Is there anything that I could have done to prevent this from happening? The only reason I ask you to say this or ask this question is because I want you right away to start realizing, wait a minute, if I'm not careful, I'm going to start getting into a pity party. I'm going to take these emotions and go further downhill and get worse and worse. This is what you're trying to prevent. This is by no means a way to minimize the crisis or the problem. And let me tell you right up front, if you're working with somebody trying to help them, the last thing that you want to do is ask them right away as they're going through the crisis, what could you have done to prevent this? That sounds very, very uncaring. But if you can do it to yourself, you can look at it totally differently. But somebody does that to you. If I came up to you while you're going through your worst tragedy right this very moment and say, hey, you know what you could have done to change this and prevent this? You should have done this. No. Doesn't work there. But if you can ask yourself that, you've taken yourself to a whole nother level emotionally. It doesn't mean we can solve it right away, but get the question out there. You'd be surprised how it changes your perception on things. 3, accept what you can't change. Go through what it is that you're having a crisis or a trouble or problem with and figure out what part of this can I change? Work toward doing that. Then what part I can't change? Your goal now is to try to get to the point of accepting right away what you can't change. When you do that, your whole concept of things change. Your attitude changes. Your perceptions change. Your thought process, your beliefs change. Your emotions change. Everything will change. 4, we've got to learn to manage our emotions. We have to learn to manage our emotions. And 5, attitude. Your attitude changes all day long. Unfortunately, when we think of attitude, we think maybe of our parents saying, "Watch that attitude." Learn to identify how your attitude changes on everything. Maybe you're getting ready to eat something and you're all excited about it. Then you take a bite of it and you don't like it. Your attitude changed. It doesn't mean that attitude is something really terrible or it's all about your bad behavior. But we have a tendency to associate that because that's what we've heard all of our life, you know, as little kids. Watch your attitude. We don't have that attitude around here. But attitude changes all day long on little tiny things as well, not just the big things. So be extremely focused on your attitude. And then 6, find hope. How much hope do you have? If you have hope, you can get through anything. Now, I'm not going to answer how to get hope. I can't answer that. You've got to figure it out. You've got to figure out where to find your hope. And you've got to be focused on that. Understand when you've lost hope, the first thing that you want to do is throw in the towel. But the first thing that you need to do is ask yourself this question, where is more hope? How do I get more hope? Where can I go? What do I need to do? How do I change this perception to have more hope? It's your perception, most likely, that's causing you not to have that hope. Because it's out there. You've just got to find it. That's very difficult to do when we have allowed the crisis or the problem to really take control of us emotionally. The 7, get a tight support group of friends. Get a tight support group of friends. Very, very important. I find that people who do not have a very tight support group of friends usually don't get through their problems or their challenges as fast or with that support. You've got to have it. So these are the 7 things. Now we're going to see how we can apply this into a consultation. I think you're really, really going to enjoy this. This is going to get pretty deep, but it's pretty good stuff. So let's listen in now to our consultations. Well, Barry, I want to thank you so much for trusting me, taking the time with me today to go over this program together with you. And what I'd like you to do, Barry, is just kind of, you know, share your story. And man, do you have one? And then just real quickly, just want to make sure you're still there. You there, Barry?
I'm still here.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and give us a little bit of a cliff note of what you've gone through in your whole life and, of course, recently.
Okay, well, I grew up on a farm in Michigan, went to college, got a degree in engineering, and have been working in the engineering business for about 30 years. I've owned my own business. I've worked for large companies. I've worked for small companies and have considered myself pretty successful. About 14 years ago, met a lady through a family friend and fell in love, and she became my third wife. I was her second husband. I helped her raise her children from her previous marriage, and but I had a pretty good life going until about 18 months rolled around, 18 months ago. When we met, she had lupus, which is an autoimmune disease, and it affects different people in different ways. But she was pretty much in remission and was in good health most of our relationship. A little over 18 months ago, she started not feeling well, started losing weight, but didn't get to the doctor. And then in March of 2010, I was laid off my position in the company that I was working in, which was kind of a senior management marketing position. My job was terminated. I was laid off. A month later, I finally got my wife, Linda, to the doctor, and she was diagnosed with stage 3 liver disease and admitted to the hospital. There were a lot of medical complications, which I won't go into, but a few weeks after that, our oldest daughter, who was 17 and a senior in high school, told us she was pregnant. And then a few weeks after that, I was at the hospital, and one of our dogs was killed in an accident. He got out in the street and got hit at night by a car. And then my wife died on June 18th of a brain hemorrhage. So all of these things happening within a three-month period, and I've struggled to recover from all of that. I'm a Christian, been connected with my church, and I think that's been a big help. Just, you know, getting back in business and, you know, earning an income and taking care of our younger daughter, who's now 17 and a senior in high school, and, you know, she's gone through some emotional difficulties as well, has been a challenge. And I said in my email to you that, you know, I've met you at a conference. I've purchased some of your CDs and listened to a lot of them, and they've been very helpful. But I just struggle almost on a daily basis, getting things moving and getting my life, back on track. Basically, you know, reinventing my life in my mid-50s.
Yeah, I can totally relate and understand that. That's huge. Thanks for sharing. Kind of got me a little watered in the eyes there, that's for sure. Well, let's get started, Barry. And what I'm going to do is we're going to go through some hardcore stuff here, okay? And my job is to give you a lot of different angles, a lot of ways to look at things, and different goals that we're going to have. So let's go ahead and get started. The first thing that we need to do is we need to acknowledge, Barry. You can't change what you don't acknowledge. So what I want you to do is make an honest assessment of what's going on in your head and how you're reacting to it. So share that with me right now. This concludes Module 1.